With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
To the left-hand side for Vieira. He'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel Jesus, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of the 90 Min Football family with me, your host as always, Harry Simeon. We're going to try and make sense of what we witnessed at Emirates Stadium this afternoon. Arsenal went into the game having just watched Liverpool slip up against Crystal Palace. Look, I've always said that for me, the biggest threat and the biggest danger was Manchester City. And we watched Liverpool drop points, which should have been some form of a boost. But to me, like, I remember being at the ground and sort of when the full-time whistle went in the Liverpool-Crystal Palace game, I was sat in my position. And obviously, there were a whole load of Arsenal fans inside the stadium watching it in the concourses. And when that final whistle went, there was this massive cheer and celebration. And look, I'm not saying that people shouldn't cheer and celebrate when something happens that they like. I'm not one of those people. I'm not trying to be the celebration police or anything like that. But I remember sitting there for like 30 seconds to a minute after that, just thinking about it and what this result meant. And actually, the result meant nothing. The result at Anfield meant absolutely nothing because Arsenal needed to put 3 points on the board after Manchester City did yesterday. Because as good as Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool have been, Manchester City are the problem. And I think the reason I feel so downbeat about what we've seen today and the knock-on effect of that is not because the title race is over, because it's not. We're a couple of points behind with 6 games to go. It's not over. The reason I feel downbeat is because Manchester City getting themselves back to the top of the pile, for me, is psychologically massive. Had Liverpool gone top, I'd be far less stressed about it. Does that make sense? I just feel like with Manchester City, all we ever talk about is their inevitability. So for them to get back to the top of the pile ahead of the last 6 games, it makes you feel like it's getting away from you. It makes you feel like it's out of your grasp. And that can have a big, big impact. We're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about what went right, what went wrong. Obviously, there was more wrong than right. We're going to talk about Mikel Arteta's team selection. We're going to talk about the changes that I believe Emery made at halftime that ultimately undone us. We've got loads and loads to get into. What I do want to do is just shut down a load of the nonsense that I'm reading on social media this evening since I've got home. I was listening to TalkSport on the way home. And listen, I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, people aren't entitled to their opinions or anything like that. And listen, I work for TalkSport. So, you know, this is not me throwing shade at them as a station. But I heard people ringing up and asking whether we should be questioning whether or not Mikel Arteta gets to go into next season as the Arsenal boss. And I just thought to myself, that is madness. Absolute madness. And it's a prime example of the kind of nonsense that seems to get thrown out into the atmosphere anytime a team drop points. Liverpool were beaten at home by Crystal Palace. Not a side going for Champions League qualification like Aston Villa. They were beaten at home by Crystal Palace. And then people were ringing up on the radio and saying, well, you know, Jurgen Klopp leaving, this is the problem. You know, he shouldn't have said it when he said it. And there's a load of uncertainty around Liverpool Football Club right now. And that's had a knock-on effect. And now the team's not performing. Probably the same people that 3 months ago were telling us all that the fact that it was Jurgen Klopp's last season was actually going to have a positive impact and that that was going to make all the difference. And that's why it was their year. Just the flip-flopping and the revisionism and all of that stuff, it drives me up the bloody wall. I'm going to take loads and loads of your comments throughout this show. It's going to be a very interactive show. I'll tell you why. Normally, we've been doing the post-match podcasts the morning after the game. Gives me time to get my thoughts together. Gives me time to watch the game back. Gives me time to come up with a little bit of analysis. Tonight, I just thought I can't go to bed unless I go through this kind of therapy session and try and get it off my chest and hear from other like-minded Arsenal fans. And I have to admit, I came home. My wife was sitting at the table, having a coffee, whatever she was doing, playing on her phone. I don't know what she was doing. And I sat down and I just started talking about the game. And my wife doesn't care about football. Not in the slightest. And I just felt like I wasn't getting that response back from someone that cared. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to do the podcast tonight instead. I'm going to record it tonight. But because it's tonight, there's no plans. There's no structure. There's none of that. We're just going to talk. Therapy session here on the Chronicles of Aguna podcast. A big thank you to the Apollo, who is a City fan. Thank you, A, for joining us, and B, for your very, very kind donation to the channel. He says, City fan here. Most people forget that we signed Jesus from Palmeiras in the 16-17 season, where he mostly played on the left wing in Brazil. He's not a natural nine. We'll get on to that as well, because I did think that putting him in the nine position today wasn't necessarily the right move. And I think as the game went on, you got to see that that was really a bit of an issue and a problem for us. I guess that's a good place to begin. Mikel Arteta's starting 11 today. Now, he made three changes. He brought Trossard in. He brought Zinchenko in. And he brought Gabriel Jesus in. And out went Martinelli, Kivior and Jorginho from the side that drew against Bayern Munich. Look, I get that we are playing games every 3 or 4 days right now. And I get that you're going to need to freshen the team up at some point. And I get that you are going to need to use the full sort of group in order to make sure that your levels, your physical levels, don't drop off too much. But at this stage in the season, I think you've got to be really careful about how you do that, because any mistakes that you make, the truth is there's no time to recover from them. And he brought Zinchenko in at left back. And I have to say, before the game, I was okay with it. So I'd be a hypocrite now if I sat here and said, that's the reason we didn't win. It's Zinchenko, this is Zinchenko, that. But I do have a bit to say on him. The midfield was the bit that really worried me. I feel like ever since we pushed Kai Havertz into those forward positions and went more regularly with the Jorginho-Rice combo, and obviously we've got Thomas Partey back available now, I felt that that signified a big change in Arsenal, and it saw Arsenal take a big step forward, because all of a sudden there was far greater balance to the team. And then today, he decides to revert back to using Kai Havertz as a number eight and getting Jesus back in the team. Now, Jesus, I thought, when he came on against Bayern in midweek, was fantastic. So again, I can understand the logic and the thinking behind bringing him into the team for this one. I do feel like right now, Gabriel Jesus is probably more suited to Champions League football. So if it were me, I'd have looked at starting Jesus maybe on Wednesday, and I'd have been using Kai Havertz up front today. I just think in the Premier League, you need somebody who's a bit more of an all-rounder, in that they can bring you the link-up play. They can get a goal if they, you know, get the opportunity to do so. But also, they've got that physical presence, and they give you an out-ball, they give you an outlet. And I think the need for an out-ball is even greater when you don't have Gabriel Martinelli playing on the left wing. and you play with Leandro Trossard. He's a really good player in his own right, but he's a different player. So I have to say the team looked a little bit unbalanced for me from the very off. Something that we'd seen earlier on in the season. And if we're being honest, Arsenal weren't great in the first half of the season. A lot of that was to do with not having that right balance, I felt, in the midfield. And what did we do? We went back to that. And I couldn't really understand why. Is it overconfidence? Is it arrogance? Some people might prefer to use that term. I really don't know. I just think for me, the midfield was a big, big issue for us. And if you watched or listened to my preview podcast, you'd have heard me talking a lot about Aston Villa and the fact that they really struggle with runners coming from deep areas and popping up in those spaces in between the lines. And what you saw in the first half, when I actually thought we played quite well, was Kai Havertz on a number of occasions getting on his bike and roaming and making progressive runs, first into the space in between the lines, and then beyond at times as well. And Arsenal were finding him and Arsenal were picking him out. And a lot of those passes were coming from that left-hand side where obviously Zinchenko was situated. It was working. And I start to think about it now. I think about it now and I think Mikel Arteta, maybe he did do the right thing. Maybe he looked at the same things that I looked at. And I'm not saying that I'm on the same level as Arteta, but the point I'm making is that Aston Villa's weaknesses in recent weeks have been obvious. So Mikel Arteta looked at that and thought, I can benefit from having a player that's making runs into the box from deep. And who has done that better in Arsenal colours this season than Kai Havertz? And I'm not talking about his finishing before you start. I'm not talking about the end product. I'm talking about in terms of the movement. I don't think there's anyone in that Arsenal team that has been better in their movement in terms of going from one phase of play to another. So winning the ball back to then trying to create something. And I don't think we've had anybody else do that kind of invader job of going from one third of the pitch into the other and invading the final third of the pitch and getting there in the right time, with the right space, and in the right moments. I think Kai Havertz has done all of that really, really well. So again, although I want to pull apart Mikel Arteta's team selection here, I can understand the thinking and I can understand the logic behind doing it. But the truth is, it just didn't work. First half, I thought we were really good, apart from having applied that finishing touch. Aston Villa struck the post through Ollie Watkins. He was incredibly unlucky because the way the ball sort of spun off the post, I mean, how it didn't end up going in off the other post, I will never know, but we got away with that. Arsenal created a few chances. You know, they did. There was the Trossard one. Not sure if there was an offside in the lead up to that. And I think there might have been. I haven't watched it back yet, but I think there might have been. There was obviously Bukayo Saka coming down that right-hand side. Had a chance where he smashed the ball into the side netting where he tried to catch Martinez out at his near post. There was another instance where he cut inside onto that left foot and whipped it across the face of the goal, and it was just wide. So we did create chances. And I remember going in at halftime and thinking, frustrated that we're not in front, but also not overly concerned at this moment in time. The performance is there. We're creating chances quite regularly, quite freely. And I thought we would create more in the second half. I actually thought in the first half that Zinchenko was quite good. He intercepted the ball a couple of times in defensive areas, having anticipated really well. He played some good passes. He showed some good touches. He progressed the ball into the midfield, not just by carrying it, but also by, not just by passing it, but by carrying it at points as well. And then the second half started and it was like somebody had turned the switch off. It was like all the energy, all the fire had just gone from this Arsenal team. And we were struggling from the very beginning of that second period. We really, really were. And I remember thinking at about 55 minutes, and I know that's a little bit early, but I remember thinking at about 55 minutes, I don't think we're going to win this unless we drastically shake up the balance of this team. Because for me at that point, it just wasn't working. Villa's midfield were pretty good in that second half. You have to say that. But what Unai Emery did at halftime was a couple of things, and I'll run through them on Monday evening's episode in a lot more detail when I've watched the game back and I can pull out some examples to show you. but kind of like my initial thoughts on what Unai Emery did at the break, which tipped the balance in Aston Villa's favour, partly. And obviously the other part for me is the fitness levels, because I just think they crashed as well. We'll talk about that in a sec. But I thought he did a really good job of protecting the spaces in between the lines. Aston Villa were in a far more compact shape, which meant that there weren't those big distances between defence and midfield. And therefore, those spaces that Arsenal like to operate and generate chances from were out of bounds or very, very difficult to get into. I also think they made Zinchenko play as a left back. What Unai Emery's done quite recently with his teams is he's put a Leon Bailey or a Diaby, and he's put them right up alongside Ollie Watkins. And what he did in the second half was insist that Diaby, when he was on the pitch, and then Leon Bailey, when he came on, maintained the width for Villa. Now, if you maintain the width and, you know, you're essentially stretching Arsenal by doing that, and your midfielders are winning their duels and they're winning their battles in the middle of the park, all of a sudden, the game completely changes. Zinchenko's in the team to be a controller. But a Zinchenko, who's been pinned back into a left-back position, is nowhere near as effective. And I would go as far as saying he's a bit of a liability defensively. You've pinned him back. You've made him play the one position that, yeah, he looks like he plays on paper, but it isn't really his position, is it? Zinchenko does his best work when he goes roaming, when he goes drifting. And what Villa did a great job of, as I say, in that second period, was pinning him down into that left-back position and saying, no, you're going to play as a left-back now, because we're going to make you, because we're going to put one of our most dangerous players out on that right-hand side, and we're going to push them up high and wide, and you have no choice but to make sure that you're within close proximity to them. Then you take it into the midfield where, you know, the likes of John McGinn and Yuri Tielemans, you know, were winning a lot more than our players. And that probably comes from the fact that they're actual midfield players, and we were playing with someone who's been playing centre forward for the last few months, and a creative midfield option in Martin Odegaard, and essentially doing that thing that we did for the first half of the season, which was rely on Declan Rice to play two men's roles. And, you know, Declan Rice is not playing at the level that he's been playing in recent months, but also he looks like he's run out of gas, because we have worked the guy into the ground. And some people will say, you want to be a professional footballer playing at the very highest level, you need to be able to play every 3 or 4 days. A lot of people will say that, and they've got every right to say that. But that doesn't mean that the reality or that fatigue is not a reality. It absolutely is. And I think we saw it today, and I think we've seen it a few times in recent weeks, and we've had enough to get by and get over the line. Today, we just didn't. So Emery, I thought, did a really good job of changing the game at halftime with those subtle adjustments. And again, we'll get into those tomorrow in a lot more detail. But generally, I just think the level dropped off. And listen, I was speaking to people after the game, and someone said, and when I said, you know, I feel like we run out of gas here, I feel like we really did run out of steam, someone said to me, yeah, but Villa played on Thursday. Okay, I know that. It's not an excuse. It's an observation. I'm not excusing Arsenal for failing to win this game, because I think that if you want to win the title and you want to prove that you're not just pretenders, you're serious contenders, then you need to win these types of games. And we didn't do that. It's not an excuse, but it's an observation. Players who are normally that bit sharper, that bit quicker across the ground, who win their duels, were just not doing it today. It just wasn't happening. Gabriel Jesus up front looked really slow to me today at points. And we know that he's got this ongoing knee issue, and he's been speaking very openly and candidly recently about the impact that's having and the toll it's taking on him, and the fact that he can't play at the minute without experiencing any pain. And Gabriel Jesus, across the first few yards, you know, normally he's very sharp. He uses his quick feet and it wins him penalties. And we saw him use his quick feet at Brighton to win the penalty. We then saw him use his quick feet, you know, against Bayern Munich to then set up Leandro Trossard for what went on to be the equaliser. So, look, there's a lot that Gabriel Jesus offers, but today he seemed lost to me. When he tried to get across the ground nice and quickly at times, it just wasn't happening. I can remember a couple of sprints where I was looking at him and I was thinking, you're just not getting going here. You know, there's a problem. It's like when you put your foot down in your car and you know, if there's something wrong with your car, it's not feeding the gas through or the fuel or whatever. And it's just, it's lagging a little bit. That's what I felt there was with him. Kai Havertz offered loads in the first half in terms of making runs forward. But in the second half, we were losing the midfield battle so badly, he just ended up playing as someone who was far deeper and who lacked the freedom to be able to go and get into those more advanced areas. And then again, when I'm talking about out balls, you don't have Martinelli on the pitch. You're not going to pump one long to Gabriel Jesus and expect him to win it. You could do that to Kai Havertz, but guess what? Because he's having to muck in so much defensively in the midfield, he then hasn't got the capacity to get forward and bring you that. I thought the substitution that Mikel Arteta made, or the double change that he made initially, was a little bit strange. I thought that he was probably right to bring Jorginho on, because he needed to bring somebody on, in my opinion, who was, you know, a proper midfielder who was going to come and hopefully give us a bit more control and play in the right areas. The other change, or the initial change, was, of course, Martinelli on for Trossard, which I wasn't against. I thought, you know, Trossard had sort of faded by that point. But then I saw Takahiro Tomiyasu there, stripped and ready. And prior to this point, we'd seen Alexander Zinchenko make a few really silly mistakes, in my opinion, trying to bring the ball under control under difficult circumstances and losing possession. There was one where he'd won the ball back, and then as he was sort of making his way out of the penalty area towards Yuri Tielemans, he sort of tried some elaborate trick or piece of skill to get by him. And Tielemans then wins the ball back. Villa win the ball back, and he goes and smacks the underside of the bar and then the post. And you're thinking to yourself, like, what are we doing here? It feels like we're pressing the self-destruct button. At that point, or just a few minutes after all of that, when I saw Tomiyasu warming up, I thought about who he might be coming on to replace. And I have to say, in my mind, and you might agree, you might disagree, in my mind, it made more sense to take Zinchenko off. Regardless of the fact that Ben White was on a yellow card, I just trust Ben White more defensively. I trust Ben White on a yellow card more than I trust Alexander Zinchenko, because he was struggling at that point in the game. The moans and groans were coming from the supporters because he was losing the ball. He just didn't look anywhere near as assured as he did in that first period. And yeah, it was a difficult watch. It was really, really difficult to see how Arsenal were going to be able to kind of swing the momentum back their way and back in their favour, because Villa had grown and grown and grown into the game. I thought in the first half they were okay. Not bad, but certainly not anywhere near their best. And then the second half started, and they started to get on top a little bit, and you could feel the confidence was growing and growing and growing. And you could feel, you could feel Unai Emery almost sniffing blood at that point. People will start the whole Emery Arteta debate up again now, because obviously, we've lost to a new Unai Emery side for the second time this season. This is what I'll say to you. This football club is on the right path. It's been on the right path for a little while now. And even if we fail to win the Premier League title this season, the fact that we'd have been in the race in consecutive seasons shows you, A, that this team is here to stay, B, that the progress has been made, and C, that, you know, it ain't that bloody easy to win a Premier League title when you're up against a side who have allegedly broken the rules on 115 occasions. I'll just leave that out there. But the point I'm trying to make is that if you are one of these people that is like going over the top and way overboard on this, give your head a wobble. If you're one of these people that is sitting there saying, oh, we should have kept Unai Emery, you have lost your marbles. And you probably need to do something about it, because Unai Emery's Arsenal were dire. They were dire. Unai Emery is doing a good job at Aston Villa, but that doesn't mean he did a good job at Arsenal. Okay? And that's the reality of it. I thought, as I said, he made a couple of tweaks at halftime that affected us. And what I'm disappointed by when it comes to Mikel Arteta is that he didn't respond. Or you could put it this way. Maybe you could say, actually, he did respond, but he responded too late. And because he responded too late, Villa were already in the ascendancy, and it was always going to be extremely difficult to get anything out of the game from that point. The first goal that we conceded, the way the ball comes across the penalty area like that, and the fact that nobody at the far post is switched on to the possibility of Leon Bailey coming in is really, really disappointing. And when you think about how we've defended in 2024, up until what, Tuesday, it's been brilliant. But the standard, the defensive standard has dropped dramatically over the last few days. And that needs to improve. Because when you're blunt in attack, when you're toothless in attack, the main thing is don't lose the game. And although a draw today would have been damaging still, and we'd have still lost top spot and Manchester City would have still been sitting there pretty, the fact that we've lost it feels like a real hammer blow because of the nature of the defeat and the way, once again, we've been caught napping. The second goal, where Watkins races through and chips it over the goalkeeper, brilliant finish. Got no idea what Emile Smith Rowe was doing back there, you know, alongside him, sort of chasing backwards. Could he have done more? Maybe he could have done more, Emile Smith Rowe. I actually wasn't too pleased with Emile Smith Rowe's performance when he came on. I thought he was lacking. I thought he was poor. I thought he lacked commitment. There was a couple of chances to win the ball back. I remember him sort of bottling, pulling out of one specific challenge in an attacking area. And, you know, had we won the ball back there, we could have been on our way to something. It's easy to say all that stuff with hindsight and to be very revisionist. But, you know, we talk a lot about Smith Rowe. Where does his future lie? He had an opportunity to come on today and give a good account of himself. And I don't really think he'd done that. But look, I've picked out some individuals because I think their performances or certain aspects of their performance were worth discussing. But I'm not going to go on a witch hunt and sit here and say it's because of him or it's because of him or it's because of him. No, you know, that's not fair. Arsenal are just 2 points off the top of the Premier League going into the last six games of the season and could be in a Champions League semi-final by the end of Wednesday night. That is progress. This team is moving forward. And although I want us desperately to win the league, if we lose it to City, I'll feel much better than if we lose it to Liverpool, because I know that City is still the benchmark. I know that City is still there. I wouldn't bet against City winning the treble again this season. But Liverpool, they're not there. And so if you lose out to them, then it means you haven't done everything within your power, really. Falling short to City is not a disgrace. There's no shame in it. Doesn't mean I'm going to accept it every year. But the point I'm trying to make here is that when you look at the bigger picture, when you zoom out, if you had said to me in December when we were going through a rough patch or whatever it was, that we'd be 2 points off the top going into the last six games of the season, wouldn't you have taken that? I think we all would. So sometimes you need to put that context out there, and you need to think about that context before you go overboard and start calling for this person to be sacked and that person to be sold and released, etc., etc., etc. Okay, what else did I say I was going to talk about? I can't even. I'm so tired. Like it's 10 to 11 at night. I've come home deflated, downbeat. That's the point. I keep talking about, you know, where we are and how close we are and the fact that we're within touching distance and the fact that that's a big improvement is something we should be proud of. I say all of that, but it doesn't mean I'm not deflated. It doesn't mean I'm not deflated. I feel terrible after watching that. I'm really, really struggling with it. And I think the scariest thing about it is that I don't actually think Mikel Arteta knows what happened to his team in that second half. Do I think he got the team balance wrong? Yes. Do I think, though, that team was good enough to play much better than it did? Yes. Do I think that Mikel Arteta should have made changes maybe a little bit earlier? Yes. But, yeah, it's one of those things, right? Hindsight is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Julian says in the chat, I enjoyed last season and I'm enjoying this season. I've enjoyed this season and last season. You got to enjoy the ride. When you're in there and amongst it, you got to enjoy it. You got to take it on and you got to make the most of it. But when you crash, it really bloody does hurt, doesn't it? So to kind of summarize before I take some of your questions, so please get your questions in the live chat box, put a queue at the beginning of them, and I'll take a few before I go. We'll take some more on the next episode as well. My summary of today's game is this. The balance of the team from the off was a little bit out, if that makes sense. I felt like the midfield was the area that really, really caused us problems, in that Villa were able to dominate there. And the more they were able to dominate, and particularly when some of the fatigue kicked in. And listen, I know that Villa have played a lot of games as well. And I know that, it's not an excuse. It isn't an excuse. It's an observation. I really do think that the physical level was shot. And I would go as far as saying I saw that on 55 minutes, 60 minutes. And I was really worried from that point. Normally, until about 75 minutes, I'm never stressed. But I was stressed today because I just couldn't see where the momentum shift was going to come from, where the momentum shift in our favor was going to come from, and how we were going to make that happen. But yeah, going back to what I said, I think the team balance was off. I think that the fatigue issue caused us a problem. I think that Aston Villa were very smart in the way they went about things in the second half. I thought Unai Emery was very, very smart. I gave Unai Emery a lot of stick when he was Arsenal manager because I didn't think he was the right fit and I didn't think he was the right guy. And he wasn't. That proved itself. I said that Mikel Arteta with time would take this club forward. And again, over time, that's proved itself to be true. I'm not one of these people going, oh, well, this is as far as he can take us, move him on. He's earned the right to continue in this job. And whatever happens between now and the end of the season, I'll be consistent on that. But I do think today what you saw was one manager perhaps overcomplicate his team selection by making changes, but not just making like-for-like changes, almost shuffling the pack to the point where someone who'd been playing centre forward for months and had his best period in an Arsenal career is now being dropped back into midfield. Like I thought that was a problem on this particular day. I think Villa were very, very good. And I think Emery's changes allowed them to sort of create that platform from which they could go on and eventually go on and win the game. Yeah, I think Emery did outsmart Mikel Arteta on this particular day. And I hope that when he goes home and he watches it and he breaks it all down, that Mikel Arteta will, know exactly what went wrong. And, he'll know far better than I ever could or you ever could. And that's fine. But I genuinely got the impression from Mikel Arteta after the game that he was stunned and a little bit bemused by everything that had happened. Because, yeah, it was just such a major drop off in level and performance. And unfortunately, at this stage in a title race, up against the likes of Manchester City, you can't afford for that to happen. It did. And we've got to live with the consequences and we've got to move forward. Let me take a few of your questions. Wesbird says, why do you think he was so reluctant to take Zini off and he's bringing him back into the team? It unsettled Gabriel a bit. What do you want to see happen with Arteta's team selection and system? I think the logic probably today in leaving Zinchenko was, or leaving him until he did, was, we need a goal. And Zinchenko is more likely to create for you than any other left-back option that we have. So it's another creative force on the pitch, albeit from a slightly deeper role. I think that would have been the logic with Zinchenko today. And when you concede a goal, does that really change? No, actually, the need for a goal sort of going your way is obviously greater. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of the team selection, I just want him to go back to what's been working, which is Kai Havertz up front, Saka and a winger around him, and then that balance in midfield, whether that be playing Jorginho alongside Rice or whether that be playing Partey alongside Declan Rice. That brings me on nicely to the next question from Afsar, who says, why didn't we just play Partey or Jorginho and Rice in the middle? Then we would have won 110%. Don't fix it if it ain't broken. And you know what? I've been speaking to a friend of mine this evening on WhatsApp who's not an Arsenal fan. And he kind of said something along similar lines of like, it feels like Arteta sometimes overcomplicates things and seeks to fix things that aren't actually broken. And I think you're right. I think that Arsenal have found a really nice balance in this sort of period between now and sort of the turn of the year, where the midfield was functional both defensively, but also could generate opportunities for you offensively, where we had a centre forward that isn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but brings you a variety of skills. Therefore, you can play in a variety of ways. And it just feels like today, for whatever reason, Mikel Arteta overthought it, overcomplicated it, changed it up, shook it up a little bit, and put us in a position where we weren't quite as cohesive. Having said that, the first half display I thought was fine, which makes me feel like it's more to do with players running out of steam, and that's more likely why we saw the drop off than it being about the tactics and the selections, etc., etc. Harry, a fellow Harry, says, I'm puzzled as to why Partey isn't playing, especially when you're trying to shuffle the pack. I completely agree with this. You know, Thomas Partey's been out for a long, long time, but we all agree what a top player he is. We can all agree that he's looked a little bit rusty at points in games since coming back. But a 60% fit Partey gives you more in midfield than that midfield we had today. That's the truth of it. That's the reality of it. And he might be leaving in the summer. There might be a decision taken to let him go because obviously the fitness problems, the issues, you know, they're a problem for us. You can't build a team around or rely upon someone that you just can't trust to be fit. But having worked his way back into contention, having been through all the rehab and having been training for a number of weeks before we as fans even knew that that was the case, and then to not be used at the business end of the season makes no sense to me. What was the point in keeping him then? Do you know what I mean? It just, to me, it doesn't make sense. What else have we got? Sandy says, do you think that the title race is over for Arsenal? Do I think that the title race is over? I don't think that it's over. Like, I don't think you can say that when you're 2 points behind with six games to go. I don't think you can say that it's over. But I will say that it's going to be really difficult now because I don't see us, even after having slipped up today, winning the remainder of our Premier League games. And if you go over to the 90-minute Instagram, there was a clip that went around where, oh, I beg your pardon, it was my Instagram, I think, at Harry Simeon. There was a clip going around where on one of the shows, the guys were trying to sort of push the pressure my way and saying, well, Arsenal have to win the league now. And I said, do you understand the scale and the magnitude of what you're expecting them to do? You're asking this team to continue to be in this almost perfect form for the remainder of a season. It's just not going to happen. Not realistic, particularly when the pressure kicks in. Just the law of average, the law of averages just say that it won't happen. I don't think it's over. I think we've still got to keep going. And I think a win against Munich and booking our place in the semi-final will give us a massive boost in terms of confidence, which can at times re-energize people. I think, you know, the Munich result could be massive, but we need to turn this around quickly. You need to bounce back quickly. Otherwise, we could see our whole season crash and burn in the space of a week, and nobody wants to see that. Somebody said, Odredek says, you'll be getting a lot of banter from the 90 Min guys over Emery. Yeah, probably. And that's fine. That's fine. We did a video on Friday. We were very complimentary of Unai Emery, actually. Ivan says, how important is the game at midweek versus Bayern now? I feel like if we lose, everyone will lose their heads and the season will be finished. Yeah, I feel like that game takes on greater significance and greater importance because we're at a point now where we've given up, you know, control. Last week it was Arsenal going to win the league, Arsenal going to win the league. And I kept saying, calm down, long way to go. Lots of difficult fixtures to come. And people would say to me, yeah, but it's in your hands. Well, it's not now. So that changes things. I get irritated when I hear people say things like, oh, but you bottled it. No, because you can't bottle something that you weren't expected to win. Do you think we've been the bookmakers' favorites? No, not at all. Even being top of the league, we were never the bookmakers' favorites, not during this recent period. So, you know, it goes to show, doesn't it, that, you know, these narratives, they're just born out of people wanting to be idiots, basically, online and trying to find something to have a joke and a laugh about. I think the game against Bayern, going back to Ivan's question, could be huge because psychologically, I think it will give us either a massive energy boost or it could be the final kick and the big drainer that we don't need, essentially. Sephiroth says, don't you feel bad about always making excuses to say we won't win in the 90 min? We won't what? Let me try and read that again. Don't you feel bad about always making excuses to say we won't win? Are you talking about on the 90 min show every season? You don't trust Arteta, just say it like it is. Nothing to do with my trust in Arteta. I think Mikel Arteta has done a wonderful job at Arsenal and has taken Arsenal from a point of real despair to a point now where you're all sitting there on a Sunday night, midway through April, disappointed that you might have just blown the title. That was unthinkable a few years ago. So I think Mikel Arteta has done a fantastic job. I absolutely do trust him. The reason I say we're not going to win it, and I've been saying consistently we're not going to win it and telling people not to get carried away, is because I know how bloody good this Manchester City side are. And I look at their fixtures now and I can see nothing less than 6 victories. That's what I see. That's what I forecast. And if that's the case, then, you know, the ask of Arsenal is huge. For Arsenal, let's say Arsenal need to win the league. I'm mixing up my words because I'm so tired. Let's just say that Arsenal have to win the remaining games to win the league. You would be saying that Arsenal would have won 16, drawn one and lost one of their last 18 in the Premier League season. Do you understand how ridiculously tough that is to do? Which shows you the standard that you're up against, because we've been near on perfect. And we're not even top. So, yeah. Anyway, pointless gamer says that you got to go sleep, Harry. Yeah, maybe I do, mate. Maybe I do. My eyes are feeling heavy and I'm feeling a bit downbeat. That's the truth of it. We'll be back tomorrow evening and Monday evening, that is, and we'll break it down in a little bit more detail. We'll talk about the sort of tactical side. I'll produce some examples of the tweaks that Emery made that I was referring to there. And we'll get into that. And we'll leave it there and we'll catch up tomorrow. Thank you to everyone that's joined the live stream this evening. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, please do leave a like on the video, subscribe to the channel as well. If you're brand spanking new, we've got over 1,000 people watching the stream live at the moment across the different platforms. Thank you to everyone. I really do appreciate the love and support. In summary, just to quickly round it off one more time, don't really know what went wrong in the second half. The only thing I could really see was the physical levels dropping off. It was obvious to me that Emery had made a couple of tweaks that worked very, very well. And that's kind of my theory at the moment. But, you know, I'll either sort of solidify that theory tomorrow when I watch the game back, or I'll think something else, in which case I'll let you know. But that's where I'm at on that. What I will say is, you know, we've been talking a long time about Arsenal being in a place where we can be proud now. And what I'm really keen to do is enjoy the ride. And although we've had a disappointing setback today in the context of the title race, we are in a Champions League quarterfinal, second leg on Wednesday night. And we haven't been in that position for a long, long time. So try, as difficult as it is, to compartmentalize what we've just seen in your brain and just enjoy the ride, enjoy the moment, enjoy the fact that we're going to Bayern Munich. And and that victory could book us a place in the last four of Europe's premier competition, a competition that for years we've been out of. And even in the years prior to that, we were in it for a period of time without ever being able to make a real dent. So be proud of that, enjoy that, be happy, and look forward to the game on Wednesday. And you never know, as I say, if we get the result we need out there, that could be the energy boost that we need to finish our season strongly, because momentum in football is so, so important. And even when you are feeling the legs and it's feeling a little bit heavy and you're struggling, momentum, energy, even mentally can give you that little bit of a boost that maybe you need. Before I go, Alex says, we just ain't good enough. City on a different level. City are on an incredible level. They have been for years and years and years. And, you know, that's why Liverpool, for all their greatness under Jurgen Klopp, have only won one Premier League title. I keep saying that, but it's true. Sefi Roth says, well, we need to stop letting football do this to us. It's tough. AJ Envoy says that it is tough, Harry. I get that. I really do. But if you want to win, that's the destiny that awaits us. We have to do, we have to topple City. The standard of the league is raised. Absolutely. Okay. Guys, thank you all so, so much. Like, share, subscribe, all the rest of it. And I'll be back tomorrow with more. I'm going to go and hit the sack. All the best. Up the Arsenal.